So continuing our theme on the five khandhas, I thought I'd switch over to the Majjhima Nikaya for one sutta. I think it'll probably take the whole period. And this is the number 35, the shorter discourse to Satchika. And I chose this one because it's got most of the content, the significant content of the Anattalakkhana Sutta in it, in just a very slightly different form, but in the context of a response by the Buddha to some questions and challenges from the Nigantha Satchika. And it's sort of kind of an entertaining version of the Anattalakkhana Sutta.
And it's also, isn't this the one where it kind of lays out kind of really as Ajahn Jeff, sort of the not self strategy?
The not self strategy, yeah.
So it's like clearly kind of lays it out.
Yep. So I thought it was a good way, rather than, I mean, it would sort of be a natural thing in this series of suttas around the five khandhas to read out the Anattalakkhana Sutta, but we chant it so much and many people know it quite well, so I thought, well, we'll get the content, but with more of a story around it and a slightly different angle. So Satchika is a Nigantha, Jain. He's the son of apparently two well-known Jains at the time, and is known as a very expert debater, very clever. He's also mentioned in one of our chants, just when we're chanting one of the Parittas, the Bahun Paritta. He's featured in that, so we chant that the next time. You can look out for him. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Vaisali in the great wood in the hall with the peaked roof. Now on that occasion, Satchika, the Nigantha's son, was staying at Vaisali, a debater and a clever speaker regarded by many as a saint. He was making this statement before the Vaisali assembly. I see no recluse or Brahman, the head of an order, the head of a group, the teacher of a group, even one claiming to be accomplished and fully enlightened, who would not shake, shiver, and tremble and sweat under the armpits if he were to engage in debate with me. Even if I were to engage a senseless post in debate, it would shake, shiver, and tremble if it were to engage in debate with me. So what shall I say of a human being? He has a high opinion of himself. Then, when it was morning, the Venerable Asaji dressed. Venerable Asaji, one of the original five disciples of the Buddha, and taking his bowl and outer robe, went into Vaisali for alms. As Satchika, the Nigantha's son, was walking and wandering for exercise in Vaisali, he saw the Venerable Asaji coming in the distance and went up to him and exchanged greetings with him. When this courteous and amiable talk was finished, Satchika, the Nigantha's son, stood at one side and said to him, Master Asaji, how does the recluse Gotama discipline his disciples? And how is the recluse Gotama's instruction usually presented to his disciples? This is how the Blessed One disciplines his disciples, Agyavesana, and this is how the Blessed One's instruction is usually presented to his disciples. Bhikkhus, material form is impermanent. Feeling is impermanent. Perception is impermanent. Formations are impermanent. Consciousness is impermanent. Bhikkhus, material form is not self. Feeling is not self. Perception is not self. Formations are not self. Consciousness is not self. All formations are impermanent. all things are not self. So if you remember, that's the we recite those lines in the morning chanting. In the second half of it, salutation. That is how the Blessed One disciplines his disciples, and that is how the Blessed One's instruction is usually presented to his disciples. If we have heard what the recluse Gotama asserts, we have indeed heard what is disagreeable. Perhaps sometime or other we might meet Master Gotama and have some conversation with him. Perhaps we might detach him from that evil view. Now at that time, 500 Lichavis had met together in an assembly hall for some business or other. Then Satchaka the Niganta's son went to them and said, "Come forth, good Lichavis, come forth. Today there will be some conversation between me and the recluse Gotama. If the recluse Gotama maintains before me what was maintained before me by one of his famous disciples, the bhikkhu named Asaji, then just as a strong man might seize a long-haired ram by the hair and drag him to and drag him fro and drag him round about, so in debate I will drag the recluse Gotama to and drag him fro and drag him round about. Just as a strong brewer's workman might throw a big brewer's sieve into a deep water tank and, taking it by the corners, drag it to and drag it fro and drag it round about, so in debate I will drag the recluse Gotama to and drag him fro and drag him round about. Just as a strong brewer's mixer might take a strainer by the corners and shake it down and shake it up and thump it about, so in debate I will shake the recluse Gotama down and shake him up and thump him about. And just as a 60-year-old elephant might plunge into a deep pond and enjoy playing the game of hemp washing, so I shall enjoy playing the game of hemp washing with the recluse Gotama. Come forth, good Lichavis, come forth. Today there will be some conversation between me and the recluse Gotama." For those who are interested, hemp washing. The commentary explains that men play this game when preparing hemp cloth. They bind up handfuls of rough hemp, immerse them in water, and beat them on planks to the left, right, and middle. A royal elephant saw this game, and plunging into the water, he took up water in his trunk and sprayed it on his belly, his body, both sides, and his groin. Thereupon some Lichavi said, "Who is the recluse Gotama that he could refute Satchaka the Niganta's son's assertions?" "On the contrary, Satchaka the Niganta's son will refute the recluse Gotama's assertions." And some Lichavis said, "Who is Satchaka, the Niganta's son, that he could refute the Blessed One's assertions?" "On the contrary, the Blessed One will refute Satchaka, the Niganta's son's assertions." Then Satchaka, the Niganta's son, went with 500 Lichavis to the hall with the peaked roof in the great wood. Now on that occasion, a number of bhikkhus were walking up and down in the open. Then Satchaka, the Niganta's son, went up to them and asked, "Where is Master Gotama staying now, sirs? We want to see Master Gotama." "The Blessed One has entered the great wood, Agivesana, and is sitting at the root of a tree for the day's abiding." Then Satchaka, the Niganta's son, together with a large following of Lichavis, entered the great wood and went to the Blessed One. He exchanged greetings with the Blessed One, and after this courteous and amiable talk was finished, sat down at one side. Some of the Lichavis paid homage to the Blessed One and sat down at one side. Some exchanged greetings with him, and when this courteous and amiable talk was finished, sat down at one side. Some extended their hands in reverential salutation towards the Blessed One and sat down at one side. Some pronounced their name and clan in the Blessed One's presence and sat down at one side. Some kept silent and sat down at one side. When Satchaka the Niganta's son had sat down, he said to the Blessed One, "I would like to question Master Gotama on a certain point, if Master Gotama would grant me the favor of an answer to the question." "Ask what you like, Agivesana." "How does Master Gotama discipline his disciples, and how is Master Gotama's instruction usually presented to his disciples?" "This is how I discipline my disciples, Agivesana, and this is how my instruction is usually presented to my disciples." "Bhikkhus, material form is impermanent. Feeling is impermanent. Perception is impermanent. Formations are impermanent. Consciousness is impermanent. Bhikkhus, material form is not self. Feeling is not self. Perception is not self. Formations are not self. Consciousness is not self. All formations are impermanent. All things are not self. This is the way I discipline my disciples, and this is how my instruction is usually presented to my disciples. A simile occurs to me, Master Gotama. Explain how it occurs to you, Agivesana, the Blessed One said. Just as when seeds and plants, whatever their kind, reach growth, increase, and maturation, all do so in dependence upon the earth, based upon the earth. And just as when strenuous works, whatever their kind, are done, all are done in dependence upon the earth, based upon the earth. So too, Master Gotama, a person has material form as self, and based upon material form, he produces merit or demerit. A person has feeling as self, and based upon feeling, he produces merit or demerit. A person has perception as self, and based upon perception, he produces merit or demerit. A person has formations as self, and based upon formations, he produces merit or demerit. A person has consciousness as self, and based upon consciousness, he produces merit or demerit. Agivesana, are you not asserting thus, material form is myself, feeling is myself, perception is myself, formations are myself, consciousness is myself? I assert thus, Master Gotama, material form is myself, feeling is myself, perception is myself, formations are myself, consciousness is myself. And so does this great multitude. What has this great multitude to do with you, Agivesana? Please confine yourself to your own assertion alone. Then, Master Gotama, I assert thus, material form is myself, feeling is myself, perception is myself, formations are myself, consciousness is myself. In that case, Agivesana, I shall question you in return. Answer it as you choose. What do you think, Agivesana? Would a head-anointed noble king, for example, King Pasenadi of Kosala, or King Ajatasattu Vedehiputta of Magadha, exercise the power in his own realm to execute those who should be executed, to fine those who should be fined, and to banish those who should be banished? Master Gotama, a head-anointed noble king, for example, King Pasenadi of Kosala, or King Ajatasattu Vedehiputta of Magadha, would exercise the power in his own realm to execute those who should be executed, to fine those who should be fined, and to banish those who should be banished. For even those communities and societies, such as the Vajjians and the Malians, exercise the power in their own realm to execute those who should be executed, to fine those who should be fined, and to banish those who should be banished. So all the more so should a head-anointed noble king, such as King Pasenadi, King Ajatasattu, he would exercise it, Master Gotama, and he would be worthy to exercise it. What do you think, Agivesana, when you say thus, material form is myself? Do you exercise any such power over that material form as to say, let my form be thus, let my form not be thus? When this was said, Sachika the Niganta's son was silent. A second time, the Blessed One asked the same question, and a second time, Sachika the Niganta's son was silent. Then the Blessed One said to him, Agivesana, answer now. Now is not the time to be silent. If anyone, when asked a reasonable question, up to the third time by the Tathagata, still does not answer, his head splits into seven pieces there and then. Now on that occasion, a thunderbolt-wielding spirit, holding an iron thunderbolt that burned, blazed, and glowed, appeared in the air above Sachika the Niganta's son, thinking, if this Sachika the Niganta's son, when asked a reasonable question up to the third time by the Blessed One, still does not answer, I shall split his head into seven pieces here and now. The Blessed One saw the thunderbolt-wielding spirit, and so did Sachika the Niganta's son. Then Sachika the Niganta's son was frightened, alarmed, and terrified. Seeking his shelter, asylum, and refuge in the Blessed One himself, he said, ask me, Master Gotama, I will answer. What do you think, Agivesana, when you say thus, material form is myself? Do you exercise any such power over that material form as to say, let my form be thus, let my form not be thus? No, Master Gotama. Pay attention, Agivesana, pay attention how you reply. What you said afterwards does not agree with what you said before, nor does what you said before agree with what you said afterwards. What do you think, Agivesana, when you say thus, feeling is myself? Do you exercise any power over that feeling as to say, let my feeling be thus, let my feeling not be thus? No, Master Gotama. Pay attention, Agivesana, pay attention how you reply. What you said afterwards does not agree with what you said before, nor does what you said before agree with what you said afterwards. What do you think, Agivesana, when you say thus, perception is myself? Do you exercise any power over that perception as to say, let my perception be thus, let my perception not be thus? No, Master Gotama. Pay attention, Agivesana, pay attention how you reply. What you said afterwards does not agree with what you said before, nor does what you said before agree with what you said afterwards. What do you think, Agivesana, when you say thus, formations are myself? Do you exercise any such power over those formations as to say, let my formations be thus, let my formations not be thus? No, Master Gotama. Pay attention, Agivesana, pay attention how you reply. What you said afterwards does not agree with what you said before, nor does what you said before agree with what you said afterwards. What do you think, Agivesana, when you say thus, consciousness is myself? Do you exercise any such power over that consciousness so as to say, let my consciousness be thus, let my consciousness not be thus? No, Master Gotama. Pay attention, Agivesana, pay attention how you reply. What you said afterward does not agree with what you said before, nor does what you said before agree with what you said afterwards. What do you think, Agivesana, is material form permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, Master Gotama. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, Master Gotama. Is what is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change, fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, Master Gotama. What do you think, Agivesana, is feeling permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, Master Gotama. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, Master Gotama. Is what is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change, fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself? No, Master Gotama. Is perception permanent or impermanent? Are formations permanent or impermanent? Is consciousness permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, Master Gotama. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, Master Gotama. Is what is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change, fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself? No, Master Gotama. What do you think, Agivesana, when one adheres to suffering, resorts to suffering, holds to suffering, and regards what is suffering thus, this is mine, this I am, this is myself? Could one ever fully understand suffering oneself or abide with suffering utterly destroyed? How could one, Master Gotama, know, Master Gotama? What do you think, Agivesana? That being so, do you not adhere to suffering, resort to suffering, hold to suffering, and regard what is suffering thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. How could I not, Master Gotama? Yes, Master Gotama. It is as though a man needing heartwood, seeking heartwood, wandering in search of heartwood, were to take a sharp axe and enter the wood. And there he would see a large plantain tree, straight, young, with no fruit bud core. Then he would cut it down at the root, cut off the crown, and unroll the leaf sheaths. But as he went on unrolling the leaf sheaths, he would never come even to any sapwood, let alone heartwood. So to Agivesana, when you are pressed, questioned, and cross-questioned by me about your own assertion, you turn out to be empty, vacant, and mistaken. But it was you who made this statement before the Vaisali assembly. I see no recluse or Brahman, the head of an order, the head of a group, the teacher of a group, even one claiming to be accomplished and fully enlightened, who would not shake, shiver, and tremble and sweat under the armpits if he were to engage in debate with me. Even if I were to engage a senseless post in debate, it would shake, shiver, and tremble if it were to engage in debate with me. So what shall I say of a human being? Now there are drops of sweat on your forehead, and they have soaked through your upper robe and fallen to the ground. But there is no sweat on my body now. And the Blessed One uncovered his golden-colored body before the assembly. When this was said, Satchaka the Niganta's son sat silent, dismayed, with shoulders drooping and head down, glum, and without response. Then Dumukha, the son of the Lichavis, seeing Satchaka the Niganta's son in such a condition, said to the Blessed One, "A simile occurs to me, Master Gotama." Explain how it occurs to you, Dumukha. "Suppose, venerable sir, not far from a village or town there was a pond with a crab in it, and then a party of boys or girls went out from the town or village to the pond, went into the water, and pulled the crab out of the water and put it on dry land. And whenever the crab extended a leg, they cut it off, broke it, and smashed it with sticks and stones, so that the crab with all its legs cut off, broken and smashed, would be unable to get back to the pond as before. So too, all Satchaka the Niganta's son's contortions, writhings, and vacillations have been cut off, broken, and smashed by the Blessed One. And now he cannot get near the Blessed One again for the purpose of debate." When this was said, Satchaka the Niganta's son told him, "Wait, Dumukha, wait. We are not speaking with you. Here we are speaking with Master Gotama." Then he said, "Let be, Master Gotama, that talk of ours and of other ordinary recluses and Brahmins. It was mere prattle, I think. But in what way is a disciple of the Master Gotama one who carries out his instruction, who responds to his advice, who has crossed beyond doubt, become free from perplexity, gained intrepidity, and become independent of others in the teacher's dispensation? Here, Adivesana, any kind of material form whatever, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near. A disciple of mine sees all material form as it actually is, with proper wisdom, thus, this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. Any kind of feeling, whatever, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near. A disciple of mine sees all material form as it actually, all feeling as it actually is, without proper wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. Any kind of perception whatever, any kind of formations whatever, any kind of consciousness whatever, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, a disciple of mine sees all consciousness as it actually is, with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. It is in this way that a disciple of mine is one who carries out my instruction, who responds to my advice, who has crossed beyond doubt, become free from perplexity, gained intrepidity, and become independent of others in the teacher's dispensation. Master Gotama, in what way is a bhikkhu an arahant with taints destroyed? One who has lived the holy life, done what had to be done, laid down the burden, reached his own goal, destroyed the fetters of being, and is completely liberated through final knowledge. Here, Agivesana, any kind of material form whatever, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, a bhikkhu has seen all material form as it actually is with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. And through not clinging, he is liberated. So that's the distinction between the stream enterer and the arahant, is that in addition to the insight, the realization of the khandha as not being self, he is also finished with clinging. and that non-clinging is key to the full liberation. Any kind of feeling whatever, any kind of perception whatever, any kind of formations whatever, any kind of consciousness whatever, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near. A bhikkhu has seen all consciousness as it actually is with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. And through not clinging he is liberated. It is in this way that a bhikkhu is an arahant with taints destroyed, one who has lived the holy life, done what had to be done, laid down the burden, reached his own goal, destroyed the fetters of being, and is completely liberated through final knowledge. When a bhikkhu's mind is thus liberated, he possesses three unsurpassable qualities: unsurpassable vision, unsurpassable practice, and unsurpassable deliverance. When a bhikkhu is thus liberated, he still honors, respects, reveres, and venerates the Tathagata thus: the Blessed One is enlightened, and he teaches the Dhamma for the sake of enlightenment. The Blessed One is tamed, and he teaches the Dhamma for taming oneself. The Blessed One is at peace, and he teaches the Dhamma for the sake of peace. The Blessed One has crossed over, and he teaches the Dhamma for crossing over. The Blessed One has attained Nibbana, and he teaches the Dhamma for attaining Nibbana. When this was said, Sachaka the Nigantha's son replied, Master Gotama, we were bold and impudent in thinking we could attack Master Gotama in debate. A man might attack a mad elephant and find safety, yet he could not attack Master Gotama and find safety. A man might attack a blazing mass of fire and find safety, yet he could not attack Master Gotama and find safety. A man might attack a terrible poisonous snake and find safety, yet he could not attack Master Gotama and find safety. We were bold and impudent in thinking we could attack Master Gotama in debate. Let the Blessed One, together with the Sangha of Bhikkhus, consent to accept tomorrow's meal from me. The Blessed One consented in silence. Then, knowing that the Blessed One had consented, Sachaka the Nigantha's son addressed the Lichavis. Hear me, Lichavis. The recluse Gotama, together with the Sangha of good bhikkhus, has been invited by me for tomorrow's meal. You may bring to me whatever you think would be suitable for him. Then, when the night had ended, the Lichavis brought 500 ceremonial dishes of milk rice as gifts of food. Then Sachaka the Nigantha's son had good food of various kinds prepared in his own park, and had the time announced to the Blessed One. It is time, Master Gotama, the meal is ready. Then, it being morning, the Blessed One dressed, and taking his bowl and outer robe, he went with the Sangha of Bhikkhus to the park of Sachaka the Nigantha's son, and sat down on the seat made ready. Then, with his own hands, Sachaka the Nigantha's son served and satisfied the Sangha of Bhikkhus, headed by the Buddha, with the various kinds of good food. When the Blessed One had eaten and put his bowl aside, Sachaka the Nigantha's son took a low seat, sat down at one side, and said to the Blessed One, Master Gotama, may the merit and the great meritorious fruits of this act of giving be for the happiness of the others, of the givers. Agyuasana, whatever comes about from giving to a recipient such as yourself, one who is not free from lust, not free from hate, not free from delusion, that will be for the givers. Regarding to the offering that the Lichavis gave to the Nigantha's son. And whatever comes about from giving to a recipient such as myself, one who is free from lust, free from hate, free from delusion, that will be for you. Thus ends the discourse to Sachaka. 1 thing that I really particularly appreciate about this approach, and is really well demonstrated in this sutta, is the way, and Ajahn Jeff's written a whole book about it, but the way that the Buddha uses questioning, the process of questioning, to teach Sachaka. And he, as you know, he uses that method of asking questions to elicit people's own reactions, and it's a way of training and getting people to really understand and pay attention and, process it themselves. So this is just the whole sutta, essentially, up until the very last section, is that process of questions and answers.
It seems like in this this sort of layout of questions, similar to that in the sutta, in this sutta as well.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like almost everyone Buddha asks, whenever he asks them, is that which is impermanent suffering? Everyone right away, it seems like it's obvious yes. But that's kind of strange because for probably many people, they kind of have to think about it for a bit. I mean, you can think about it and understand it, but I'm just curious why everyone seems to, in the sutta,
to automatically assume.
Whereas if I didn't know anything about Buddhism and someone asked me that, I'd say, well, no, I'm not actually. You're just curious.
It's a point. Yeah, it is a point.
It's also how dukkha was understood as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the word suffering is kind of quite limited. Like another, I mean, there's many ways of translating it, but one way is something that is impermanent, is it perfect or imperfect?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, that's how Ajahn Mahinda translated.
Oh, really?
The new Ajahn Shah. All the suffering in the new Ajahn Shah books, it's all perfect or imperfect. I think he uses imperfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. it's changing all the time. It's perfection. There are many different ways. So that, but because dukkha had a different, it wasn't limited. Just is it miserable?
Kind of a similar thought that I've had at times is that, even though it makes a whole lot of sense to me now, was sort of the assumption that just because you didn't have control over something like the khandhas, that therefore automatically that means it can't be self, you know, because the implication being that self, you know, automatically is in control or is in charge and can change things. And that's, you know, obviously an assumption that's made in this, and it's not something that I would have automatically come to right away myself as well.
What's the term Mahāvyasana?
That's a clan name. So that's how the Buddha, and oftentimes you'll see it in the suttas when the person has their own, I guess, individual name, but then they have the clan name.
So there's not any name.
Not that you mentioned in the footnote.
In the same way that, say, the Buddha is from the
Gautama clan.
Or the Sakya clan.
Sakya clan.
I hear that one. So one of you raised the point about it not being soft because you can't control it. How have you come to, over time, relate to that?
Well, just kind of trying to posit to myself, well, if I did hold a view of what is self, you know, what would that mean to me, you know? You know, every time I go through all the different kinds of things that I would see as a quality of self, it does, you know, it's, oftentimes it boils down to an issue of, you know, not only something that is stable and permanent, but anything that is kind of like stable and permanent implies a sense for me in a way of some sort of being able to be in charge of it, you know, to be able to be in control of it. Particularly if I know that I want to have, you know, if I had a choice about it, I'd certainly only have choice about pleasant, you know, to have pleasant kinds of experiences. And just by nature of the fact that you know, I don't have that possibility, just for some reason to me implies that I don't have that control, and that if there were something that were unchanging forever, solid, that I could take a refuge in, then a self, then that self would have to necessarily have the ability to control things.
It's interesting because the control one for me always lined up quite exactly with the not mine aspect. That's,
mm-hmm.
that's one of the mirrors. Where, yeah, similarly, I still get the jump. I sort of have to do some mental
leap.
To
get that connection.
Quite
straight there. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I think one thing that Richard Gombrich really points out is that, during these things, it's why everyone kind of responds so succinctly, to these questions, because there was such a prevailing view of that or Atman. And I think, at least kind of what Tambesa was talking about, for myself, coming from an American culture, it's like ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of identification of a all-pervasive infinite self.
Mm-hmm. It's more like ownership of this body. This body is mine, right?
Yeah, it's mine.
Or these thoughts and feelings are something that I should be able to control. Right. Yeah, but what a freeing concept that is. I mean, when you can sit there and watch your mind, come up with all sorts of weird, unpleasant, disgusting kinds of things, to be able to say, okay, yeah, I know there's a certain level of responsibility and karma that I have created that, creates the cause and conditions for these things to arise, but essentially they are not mine, I don't have to hold on to them as something that is inherently myself, who I am, what I am. It's sort of like I can just see them as conditions, and there's a certain response that I need to have so as not to suffer, not to continue and support them, but I don't have to say, this is who I am. To me, that's just a really liberating.
The line in our chants, I am the owner of most karma.
It's just, you mean in terms of the fact that it uses the words I am, or owner. I think
it doesn't belong to anybody else.
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't belong to anybody else. But then it's also just recognizing that, we have to use language as a convention. Even though, we're working towards an understanding that all of these things are not self or not who I am, we still communicate with each other, in a relatively efficient way, so that, we use words that have an implication of self or ownership as a conventional way of talking, not as a declaration of, truth.
Might also point to the fact that what the Buddha is offering in his teaching is not the truth. He's offering skillful perceptions that lead to the truth. So I think that what Dushan's saying, I am the owner of my karma, seems to fly right in the face of this is not mine, none of this is mine.
Right.
But I think it's another.
It's a strategy.
Perception.
Yeah.
In the same way, he'll say in one place, the body is disgusting, mm-hmm. and in another place, he'll say, the body is just the body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all skillful means. Even the whole process of going through and saying, form is not self, feeling is not self, perception is not self. It's not a declaration of a metaphysical truth. It's a strategy for recollection, for reflection, so that you come to these conclusions on your own with a real internal realization. Not as a way of just saying, this is what self, this is what's not self, as an external, statement of being or not being.
The thing too that is that this isn't a history, so it's not like a, it's not a, transcript of a conversation that happened. It's more of a summary of particular teaching, or a particular style, or the theme that the Buddha was talking about. So it's like, is this self or not self? It's not self. It's, in the conversation itself and the teaching, there may have been a back and forth, and I didn't understand that. And, it's like, maybe take place over 3 or 4 weeks. Because it does say, like, what the Buddha would instruct. One or two, I wanted to go out on all those rounds, stuff like that. So it's like it's presented like this. He just sat down, gave his teaching in one afternoon.
There might be some polishing involved.
Yeah, exactly.
Any other comments or questions?
I thought it was a
Ajahn Jack talks a lot about the whole self and not self thing. I recall from you, he kind of says that you have to build a skillful perception of self in order to then be able to let it go. But if you just sort of automatically assert that everything's not self, then there's really no sort of motivation to kind of do anything skillfully. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and certainly I think particularly as we're growing up and, you know, forming skillful habits as children and young adults, you know, a healthy sense of self works better than an unhealthy sense of self. You know? Yeah.
An experience that when people at work ask me about, you know, Buddhism or things like that, or, you know, what is this whole thing about not self?
Mm.
Or, and probably it is cultural, but when you say, when I found that I say, well, if you're, can you tell your body to not get old?
Mm.
And that usually puts a stop in pain. it's something that people don't. It's so simple,
mm-hmm.
but it really stops.
And yeah,
I can see the people's faces going.
Just like Satchika's.
For a moment, because it's so innate.
Don't ask him three times.
But it gets people because aging is such a big thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's something that.
Yeah, and so
it's hard.
Your will and knowing that you can't control it really puts people. Yeah,
yeah. Very good. Okay.